it's done.
Connor McDavid! It's not real!
The goal of the year?
Panarin!
Part of the past. The celebrations? Forgotten. The history?
Vegas Golden Knights!
History. We're back to a blank slate. Clean ice. All that matters now is what happens next. The Stanley Cup Playoffs.
Eastern Conference Final begins Wednesday.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at ArmorAll.com. Armor All. Less work, more clean. Terms apply.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
What will I become?
Senua Saga. Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
And you're listening to the fantastic Cut to the Race podcast.
Hello, my name is Brian Mylander, and you're listening to the Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Rosanna Tennant, and you are listening to the incredible Cut to the Race podcast.
Hi, I'm Jordan King, and you're listening to Formula Nerds podcast.
Hi, I'm Crofty. You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out, and away we go!
Hello and welcome back to the Cut to the Race podcast. We are here to review the first race weekend of the year, the 2024 Bahrain Grand Prix. My name is Ollie, and to review this weekend with me and everything that surrounded it, we have Abby. How are you doing today, Abby?
I'm very well, thank you, Ollie. It's good to be recording a race with you. We'll have one down after this, 23 left to go, but it feels good to get back in the swing of things. How are you?
Yeah, I'm very good. I'm excited to talk about this weekend as a whole. I mean, it was as entertaining off track as it was on track. And Sam, you're with us. How are you doing, Sam?
I'm fantastically well. I'm probably doing better than Christian Horner and Mohammed bin Salim are doing today. But I guess they get, you know, have fun, powerful positions, but... Clearly, that comes with strings attached.
Indeed. Strings attached not being the right thing, but we'll move on. So what we're going to do is we're going to start with talk about the news, because something happened over this weekend. If you live under a rock, I think you still will have heard about it. Even if you don't follow F1, I'm pretty sure you would have heard about it, but... We need to start by talking about Christian Horner. So he was cleared of all wrongdoings. His grievance was dismissed by Red Bull. That came out after free practice on Thursday. We had a statement from Red Bull letting us know that it wouldn't be going any further. The person who put in the grievance did have a right to appeal. And then during free practice too... some text messages leaked and photos and what is allegedly the messages between Christian Horner and said person. I mean, I've read these messages. I'm sure you guys have had a look at them yourself as well. This is not a good look, especially not for Christian Horner, for his marriage and his career. Sam, I'm going to start with you. What was your reaction when you... got these files through and you had a look at them, and free practice was still continuing, or it may have just finished, but either way, it was a very interesting timing. And what was your sort of initial reaction to this?
Well, more so than it being not a good look for Red Bull or Christian Horner, I think the bigger picture here is it's not a very good look for the sport in general. I think that's the big take home. And we're not going to go into the details of what was included in these messages, because let's face it, we can't verify whether or not they're real or not. Yeah, there's the veracity of them is very questionable. So I think it's better left unsaid on that point. But yeah, it's ultimately a sport that has devolved into scandal, chaos, and now potentially, as we'll get onto later, corruption. Whether those are true or not, it's really not very good. It makes the sport look completely devoid of integrity. So yeah, it's a very trying time for Formula One, both off track and on track. It's a mess.
Now, Horner hasn't he hasn't commented on these messages, whether they're real or not. But Abby, as the female on our panel, you know, F1 is about equality. It's about diversity. What was your reaction as a female seeing these? And again, these are allegedly the messages, but having this going on in the sport and not much said by anyone really about it.
Well, first of all, I think in the modern day and age with AI and that, it can be very hard to determine what is real and what has been created and technologically altered. And everything, I think, needs to be considered. It all needs to be investigated in the right manner. Red Bull have very much, before these were leaked, saying they're very much united front. They're all like in it together. But as you said, Ollie, Horner hasn't commented on these alleged messages. Jos Verstappen, however, has shared his view, saying it cannot continue this way. The situation isn't good for the team and it's driving people apart. And he's also reportedly told the Daily Mail that if Horner remains in his position as team principal, Red Bull would explode. So it is not a good look for the sport. I think, personally, I kind of think it's a shame that F1, new season, and this is what's tainting the sport. This is what people think of when they think of F1 at the moment. It's not necessarily the racing. It is all this off-track drama, as Sam said, possible corruption, which we'll get into. And it is a shame, but hopefully everything will be sorted out and everything will be taken into consideration and we will have a thorough and fair investigation.
So Sam, do you think Christian Horner can remain in position? And if he does, what do you think the knock-on effect will be? Because there's lots of talk as we're recording today.
I think he can. I don't know if he will. And I think if he does, he will be, in the court of public opinion, he will be held responsible for bringing down Red Bull if the rumours that we are starting to see emerge do come to fruition, and that is that, you know, Jos Verstappen is one thing. He is the father of the lead driver at Red Bull. He is not, you know, strictly part of Red Bull, but he obviously has a lot of sway. But the rumours today are that Max Verstappen is, you know, potentially going to leave. Mercedes has been mooted as the potential destination for him. That hasn't been helped by photos of Jos Verstappen and Toto Wolff talking, and Toto Wolff refusing to rule out any particular drivers for the future. So that's one thing. Also, Adrian Newey, who, let's face it, we know is, with a excellent team behind him, the genius of the current Red Bull philosophy and car and so on and so forth. So he is potentially rumoured to be looking to leave. Helmut Marko, who is actually a very much a key player here, because apparently he is a determining factor in a clause in Max Verstappen's contract, whereby if he leaves Red Bull, Max Verstappen can trigger a clause that would release him from his contract and he could go elsewhere. Helmut Marko is alleged to be potentially thinking about retiring, and he has come out and said that he wouldn't stand in Max's way. So that's, you know, what, one, two, three things. Apparently, Ford, who are going to be in partnership with Red Bull moving forward, are looking for backdoor ways to get out of their contracts, because obviously they don't want any part of this, seemingly. So it's essentially just, it's descended into absolute chaos. if everything that we are hearing is to be believed, this is all very much speculation and rumor at this stage. So that's why I keep on signposting it as such. But ultimately, if all of that does happen, as I said, Christian Horner will be held responsible for bringing down Red Bull, essentially, if he remains in place. And that is potentially why he cannot. Whether or not he does is a whole other, you know, kettle of fish at this stage. So that is just a number of the things at play here.
Mm. So from my opinion, it looks like all weekend, Horner and his people have tried to brush this under the carpet, say as little as possible and hope it goes away. Obviously, we had Jerry Horner turn up to Bahrain to hold hands with him in a show of, you know, unity. But can this be brushed under the carpet? Clearly, Sam, as you've said, there's so many knock-on effects now. And they are all, you know, at this stage, rumours. Nothing's come to fruition yet. But Abby, do you think that I know the rest of the world can forget about this pretty quickly because there's so much going on, but can the F1 community just let this one slide, or is it always going to be there and talked about?
I think because it has become such big news and because of the nature of what the investigation is about and the themes and topics surrounding it, it will always be there. I think people won't just like forget about it and move on. I think it will always be there, especially for Christian Horner, because if he is completely innocent and if he is, then this is something that it's going to stay with him and it's going to taint him. If it's the other way, then like, fair enough, there needs to be this investigation. But I think there will always be something about it lingering.
Ultimately, it will always be used as a punchline to a joke, regardless of what happens. People online, you know, we've seen the toxicity that you get on social media, and particularly Formula One social media. People use it as a punchline to a joke, whether or not it's true or not. Yeah, and Abby, you're right, that if it is true, then absolutely the fullest extent of whatever investigations, whatever powers be, should be pursued there, because, you know, if there is impropriety, we need to look into that as a sport. But ultimately, Christian Horner can stay in his position, seemingly, at this point. But at what cost?
I mean, we did see the Red Bull owners in Bahrain, and I'm not sure if they were planned to be there or they came to have a chat with Christian, but it did look like, you know, it was a bit awkward. And I think the whole weekend, I do and I don't feel for Christian Horner, because it just looked like the most awkward weekend of his entire life, and I bet he couldn't wait for it to be over. But at the same time, you know, they did look pretty legit to me. We can't confirm it, but some of the things that were written there could have only been said by himself. Again, I'm not saying they are real. I'm not saying they're not. But I feel like he needs to make a swift exit with his head held high, with what he's achieved, in order to save the rest of the team. Sam, I'm going off script here slightly, but you did mention Adrian Newey leaving. There were rumours a little while back about Adrian Newey leaving to go to Ferrari with Hamilton. Is that what the current topic is? Is that where we think he's going to go, or just that he's leaving?
That is the steer of the rumour and speculation online. And again, yeah, to signpost it for the umpteenth time in the last, 12 minutes, it is just rumour and speculation. This is purely hearsay that's online at this stage. Obviously, that originates from somewhere, but, I mean, we are early in this. There's who knows which ways the whole story and all of its tentacles will progress, because it is an absolute octopus of a story, let's face it.
It is, and it was only on the last show before all of this came out that we were saying about Jos Verstappen and Christian Horner not getting on. Now it seems that there's a lot more to it. And, you know, Max to Mercedes, that just seems, at this moment in time, that seems like a mind-boggling concept that triple world champion Max would go to Mercedes. I mean, why would you? But there's always things going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. Abby, would you like to talk us through something that we can actually confirm, which is some key departures at the Alpine team at the end of the weekend.
Yes. So Bahrain wasn't the best weekend for Alpine in terms of performance and results. And as a consequence of that, the team is undergoing a reshuffling of management. Obviously, they've previously had Laurent Rossi, who was the CEO, Alain Permain, the sporting director, and Otmar Szafnauer, the team principal. They all left the team last year or around then. But now, Matt Harmon, the technical director, and Dirk de Beer, the head of aerodynamics, have also left the team following round one of the 2024 season. Now, the changes that are being made is that Alpine is going to move to a trio of technical directors. So Joe Burnell will be the technical director of engineering, David Wheater will be the technical director of aerodynamics, and Kieran Pilbeam will be the technical director of performance. And this three-pillared structure is with the aim of bringing better work and collaboration across the technical areas to contribute to delivering performance, because Alpine are not happy with having finished fourth in 2022 to sixth last year, and seemingly having a very unsuccessful start to this season.
I don't know what you mean about seemingly. it's pretty slam dunk, no?
Well,
but in fairness, we always said that this McLaren approach of having a three-pronged kind of a trident-like philosophy to their structure could be a new way of working for teams in F1. And this is that first, you know, domino falling after that. So it'll be interesting to see how it works out for Alpine. But yeah, a bit of a mess, as is another story, Ollie. I'm not sure if you've even read this one yet. But Mohamed Ben Salim, the FIA president, is being investigated for allegedly intervening or attempting to interfere with the final race results of the 2023 Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. So basically what is alleged here is that Fernando Alonso, we know he got that penalty that then was appealed by Aston Martin. Initially, he'd lost his podium finish and it was P4, but the appeal was successful. He was given back his P3. So that is allegedly what Ben Sulayem waded into and said, look, I think he should have the penalty overturned. This has been verified by a few people. So the BBC have reported it, and they've said that a few people have verified it, but no one is going on the record. No one wants to go on the record, but that is the information they have. So this story is one that's going to go, you know, it's going to develop envelope the sport heading into the next edition of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. So an absolute mess again. Another thing, it's daily at this point for Formula One. So yeah, keep tabs on that, because as of recording, that is pretty much all we've got on it.
Well, it's interesting that it's now. Why is it now? Do we know?
Probably because it's in the run-up to Saudi Arabia. Probably because it's in the run-up to the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. So, yeah, a lot to keep our eyes on over the coming week or two. We will keep you posted with all of that as the stories develop. We're going to get into our weekend rating. So if it's your first time listening to the show, what we do is we rate from 0 to 10 how we found the weekend as a whole. Now, usually we do this just track action, and I think we're going to stick to that this week.
I was going to say, that was exactly what I was about to ask. Track action or just, you know?
Yeah, because I know that my weekend rating, it would have been a 10, just from entertainment value of all the things happening. But
I think we sit on different sides of this coin, Ollie. I don't find it entertaining.
Well, okay, all right. Well, it gives us something to talk about. All right, Sam, I'm going to let you go first in that case. How would you rate this weekend as a whole from 0 to 10?
It's always difficult with the first race of the season, because you've got to kind of temper your expectations and also remove the anticipation from your score to try and make it objective as possible. I'd be remiss for not saying this. F2 and F3 obviously did some heavy lifting this weekend in my my ratings.
I was going to say the same.
It always does. It never disappoints. If you want good racing over an F1 weekend, watch F2 and F3. And I imagine F1 Academy, which kicks off in Saudi Arabia in a few days' time for the 2024 season. Anyway, I think that I'm going to give it... I think it was like... a 5 out of 10. And that's factoring in the other good stuff that wasn't F1. Qualifying was pretty decent, but that was it. The race was pretty dull. Carlos Sainz was a real highlight for me. Sergio Perez as well. But yeah, there was no contest for the race win. And for the average fan, for casual fans or sports fans generally, that's a problem.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where we are.
Yeah. Okay. So starting off with a 5 from Sam. Abby, have you got your spreadsheet? I saw you writing it down, I thought, this year.
Yes, I will put it into a spreadsheet.
This year, sorry, this evening. Right. Okay. And yeah, Abby, what would you rate it?
So if I'm just rating the F1 race, I've given it a 4.5 out of 10.
That's quite generous.
I know. And then... the whole weekend, I'm saying a 5 out of 10 because, like Sam said, the highlight for me was F2 and F3. I mean, the F3 sprint, the fight for the lead was amazing to watch. And Maloney in F2 just storming across the whole weekend. They were the highlights. Yeah. F1 could be better. So starting off 5 out of 10, hopefully the season can improve as it goes on.
Okay, Oliver.
Well, thank you for asking, Sam. Because I have a new addition to the family, it was very difficult to watch all the sessions. So I watched all of the F1 sessions, but I didn't catch all of F2 and F3. I caught a lot of it, though. I'm just not going to tell you how much.
Listener, some context. Ollie never watches F2 and F3. He's now using his newborn child as an excuse.
I do. All right, I am going to give my weekend rating as a 3.5. I think it left a bit to be desired, if I'm honest with you. And to Sam's point, you know, as a casual F1 fan, why would you watch the Grand Prix next weekend, given last year and now the start of this year?
Exactly. You know, it's fine for us media types or aficionados to be like, well, actually, the you know, it's never been closer. There's only a second between the first and 20th in qualifying, and you know, the battle for the midfield and blah blah blah. That isn't what puts bums on seats.
Yeah, it is. And when your winning driver finishes 20 seconds in the lead, it's not box office, is it?
No.
Well, we're still here and we're still going to talk about it. We're going to take a short pause.
We took it all. We brought them to our land. An endless night. Ember hot and icy cold. The rage of the earth. We made this curse. Carved it in the blood on our backs. We did not see. We could not, but she did. And in the end...
what will I become?
Senua Saga, Hellblade 2.
Play it now with Game Pass.
Okay, so let's really quickly skip over the top of anything that happened in practice. Abby, would you like to talk us through who topped the timesheets?
Well, FP1, it was Daniel Ricciardo in the RB, or the V-Carb, who was fastest. And it was Alpine and Haas as the bottom four. FP2 saw a Mercedes 1-2, perhaps the only time we might see a Mercedes 1-2 this year. Verstappen was continuing to complain throughout all the practice sessions that the drivability of the car wasn't feeling that great. But then in FP3, it was Sainz fastest. And one thing to note is McLaren changed the control electronics and energy store on Lando's power unit. But I think... okay.
So at this point of the weekend, we sort of... I still knew Red Bull were fast. And people were saying, oh, they're not as fast as we think they are. No, they're just sandbagging. Sam, did you not surely think... Daniel Ricciardo's not going to win this race, is he?
No, I didn't think Daniel Ricciardo was going to win the race.
No.
Would you not be concerned if I did? but no, you're absolutely right. It was quite evident that Red Bull were not fully turning up the wick, as it were, and that they were leaving some in reserve.
There was a lot of talk, though, about Mercedes, and they're going to be fast, and you know they're going to be up there in qualifying.
Spoiler, they were not.
That really didn't turn out. Abby, do you want to go into qualifying? And we can see how much it didn't turn out.
Yes. So Q1, Sainz sat the benchmark initially. A lot of cars were slow moving out of the pits, which people were complaining about. Verstappen complained about it, unsurprisingly, at one point. Hamilton was quite slow on his first runs of softs. He only went P12. But the people that were out were Bottas, Zhou, Sargeant, Ocon and Gasly, which means that the Alpines never left the bottom five for the entire weekend.
Yeah, I don't feel like there are any surprises there. Sam, any surprise results for you in Q3?
You mean Q1?
Q1.
No, not particularly. Logan Sargeant definitely had a car underneath him that could have done better. But as we would later find out, that was not a particularly well car over the weekend. So, yeah, that was the only kind of disappointing side of things in terms of, from a driver's perspective. I was very impressed with the Haas, but we know that it has good one lap pace, but everything that we kind of, because we didn't get representative running in testing, it was a bit of an unknown as to where they'd be, and you know, could they meet the same fate as Alpine was the kind of the concern there. But yeah, pretty much as you'd expect for Q1.
So into Q2, Norris provisionally set the quickest time, but then it was Leclerc who went fastest overall with a 1:29.1. Magnussen had a time deleted at one point for track limits, but he allowed Verstappen to get a toe, which then meant Verstappen went second fastest, I believe, and it was Tsunoda, Stroll, Albon, Ricciardo and Kevin Magnussen out of Q2.
So I was surprised Stroll, or was I surprised Stroll? Stroll should have got through to Q3, surely he should have.
I think what you're trying to say is that that's a Q3 car.
Yeah. In fact, I saw a tweet from you, Sam, saying exactly that. And yes, I think you put it perfectly. That's a Q3 car, Stroll.
Yeah, it wasn't the finest lap he put together. And he wasn't even that close to getting through, from what I can remember. Mm. I don't know if I scratched that. He was within a tenth of Piastri, who I think was the guy who scraped through. So I was looking at Nico Hülkenberg's time, and he had a significantly better time in Q2 than he did in Q3.
Yeah, I mean, Nico Hülkenberg getting through to Q3 is incredible. Fair play to him. Kevin Magnussen, 15th, so good performance from him.
So Hülkenberg did get through into Q3, and it was, of course, Verstappen that took pole position, but his Q3 time, which was 1:29.179, was actually slower than Leclerc's Q2 time. Yeah, I think that's the main thing. Verstappen fastest, Leclerc second, Russell, Sainz, Perez, Alonso, Norris, Piastri, Hamilton in ninth, and Hülkenberg. So the Mercedes were definitely not, well, Hamilton certainly wasn't as quick as one would expect from FP2.
It did feel like everyone was just bigging up. Leclerc could have been on pole,
yeah,
if he had done that lap, but he didn't do that lap. That's not how it works, you know. I understand they're saying that car has the pace, Leclerc has the pace, but he didn't show it when it mattered, did he?
Yeah, it all comes for naught if you're not going to get the lap done. I think what's interesting is that, and I said this on the Pondering Papaya podcast, and also my five things we learned about the Bahrain Grand Prix piece, because obviously we love talking about my writing on this podcast, that if you tuned in as a McLaren fan expecting to see, you know, them where they were at the end of last year, you would have been disappointed with qualifying and also the race. But actually, if you look at things, Lando was only within a couple of tenths of Leclerc. I think it was, what, 2.07 tenths of a second behind Leclerc's time, which admittedly wasn't anywhere close to Leclerc's best, but he could well have been second, third on the grid, because he admitted himself that he made some mistakes. It wasn't a particularly clean lap for him. So there is promise there. And as we know, Bahrain is not a McLaren circuit. So yeah, there's probably more than meets the eye in this qualifying session. And I think it's arguably the most interesting part of the weekend. Not to, you know, poo-poo the next 20 minutes or whatever of the podcast. But yeah, that kind of Ferrari, Aston, McLaren, Mercedes battle is where the interest is and where the intrigue is. And yeah, I think there's certainly room to grow for some of those teams.
And what about Hamilton and Russell? So Russell clearly outperformed Hamilton most of the weekend. I heard people, friends, family saying, oh, he's already given up. He's off to Ferrari. He's not in all of these key meetings anymore. Is there anything to believe there? Or do you just think Hamilton didn't have the right setup for this weekend, the same as George did?
Well, first of all, not to, you know, go straight at your family, but of course he's in the key meetings. he's a Mercedes driver for another year. Truth of the matter is that Lewis went more for a race set up than George did, so he was compromised on one lap pace, and you know that is a big part of it. But I don't think we should take anything away from George. He put together a good lap, the fact he was able to out qualify a Ferrari, which we saw was pacier, and also Sergio Perez and the Red Bull, is nothing to be sniffed at.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. Right, okay, it is that time of the week where we do the world famous Formula Nerds National Anthem Review. Okay, so it was the Bahrain national anthem kicking off the F1 season for 24. What we do is we rank our national anthems from 0 to 10 and we keep a log, and then we find the best one for the year, and at the end of the year we reveal the best at the Formula Nerds Awards and the worst.
In lieu of James McKenzie being here, I should probably be the one to remind us and the listeners of the McKenzie scale, which sees that 5 is bang average. That is where the kind of the middle mark is. Not, you know, yeah, it was all right. 7. 5 is the bang average.
Yeah. Okay. No hints to where Sam's going with this. I, first of all, would like to point out that George Russell was wearing sunglasses in the dark during this national anthem, which I couldn't quite figure out. Did you guys notice this? Any thoughts on Russell wearing blue sunglasses in the dark?
Kids these days.
Sam didn't notice it either, did you?
No, I didn't notice it.
Well, if you didn't see it, go back, have a look. It's strange. I'll kick off this week. I'm to the McKenzie scale, I'm going to give it a 5. I don't really know what to say about it. It was the National Police Band playing their trumpets and things, and it was all right. We didn't have any vocals to it, so there's not much to critique there. I think, which is really sad, because I'm finding that everything's been a bit meh this podcast so far. The race is a bit meh. Feeling
quite apathetic.
The national anthem is a bit meh. Abby, I'll hand it over to you. I'll start with a 5.
You know what? I'm going to give it a 6. Because I liked it. I thought it was good that there was no singing. I quite liked the tune. I thought it was quite a good tune. I liked the fact that it was the National Police Band, quite respectful. And I also noticed how shiny and clean their instruments were, which I liked as well.
See, that tells me that it was boring, Abby. You noticed how shiny their instruments were.
The two white ones, I can't remember their names. Trombone, French one.
Yeah.
They were so shiny, but maybe it just made the music sound better to me. I don't know. I liked it. I'm giving it a 6 out of 10.
I mean, Ollie is on quite the learning curve here. You know, 30 seconds ago, it was trumpets and stuff, and now he knows what a trombone is. I mean, it was fine. It was, yeah, it was bang average. It was a 5 out of 10. It was just like, I remember just being like, oh God, I'm going to have to try and talk about this. watching it, and that was what I was thinking about. Yeah, it was just, it was a national anthem. There was a band. You know, they turned up. It was in tune. Good. You did what was expected of you. It's a 5 out of 10.
Well, the good news is this week is the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. And last year, the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix won at the Formula Nerds Awards, worst national anthem. Now, if you cast your mind back, it was a very similar setup. They had trumpets and stuff, but they played all out of tune, almost like they were playing different songs. Now, are we expecting a repeat? Hopefully, if we get some content out of the Saudi Arabian national anthem.
Was the Saudi Arabian national anthem the one with the younger boy and then the woman singer?
No, it was just... I'm pretty
sure. Which one was that?
It was just a completely out-of-control band. Saudi... I'm going to have to find it now, live on
the show.
Saudi... Oh, it's actually in my recently viewed. That's how much I enjoyed it.
Okay. How often do you watch it?
Right, here we go.
It's what cheers you up.
I'll move my mic over just so that you can hear it.
I remember that.
They play instruments about as well as you two do quizzes.
I mean, that sounds like recorder class at school, doesn't it?
It doesn't sound like it's meant to sound like that. No. I'd be surprised if it is meant to sound like that.
Yeah, well, and we even had drivers laughing at that. So let's hope next week or whenever this show comes out, that we have a better world-famous Formula Nerds National Anthem review. Okay, so let's talk about the race. As we've built up to, it was not the most exciting race, even though I'm putting on a very excited voice. We had the triple world champion, Max Verstappen, take the win by 20 seconds. He was never in doubt to win this. Leclerc did put a move in going into turn one, which didn't produce anything. And off he went. We have to talk about him because he won the race. Another faultless drive, faultless pit stops. What more can we say? Sam, anything to say on Max Verstappen and the return of the champ?
To borrow a sentiment that I used during the national anthem review just now, well done, you did your job. 5 out of 10. Like, this is where the benchmark is for Max Verstappen.
Yeah.
This is what we expect of him. Yeah, he's robotic almost. I don't know if you've seen the lap times of his first stint. Like, I think it's like a 10 or 15 lap period, and every lap is within 1 or 2 tenths of a second of each other. It's just insane the levels of consistency he's able to achieve. Yeah, a faultless performance, a brilliant performance. The fact that we have nothing to say about it shows how good it is, really.
Yeah. I mean, it is robotic. It's incredible. I mean, Abby, I don't think even needed to pit throughout the race. He was just doing it because it was a free stop each time he did it. It was, you know, he's a world champion and he's showing it, and we have to take our hats off to him. But my God, we really would love to see a battle for a win.
I think that's the thing. Like, now we all expect Verstappen to get pole and to keep the lead and then to win the race. And it's an amazing feat on his part, being able to do that. But he doesn't really have to work during the race, finishing 22.4 seconds ahead of his teammate and lapping however many cars. And Stroll in 10th was 93 seconds before him. Like, there is a huge disparity between Verstappen and the rest of the field. And he, like, hats off to him, but I can imagine it's really lonely. Like, he wasn't shown on the broadcast much. And I remember Hamilton in 2021 saying he loved that season, probably not the final race, but he loved that season because he had that challenge. He actually had someone to battle against. And Max isn't getting that. And it's a bit sad, really.
Yep. That's what we should be concerned about. Max's mental health.
No stress for Max, is there? There's not much for him to be stressed about.
Well, Red Bull are doing their best. But no, to be honest, I'm just looking forward to the Singapore Grand Prix because we might get a different winner.
Oh, please don't tell me it's going to be that long. I mean, I thought, okay, maybe the Red Bull isn't as quick, you know, Sergio Perez qualifying in fifth, but Newey's brought another car. I mean, he's completely changed his car. It looks completely different. People are saying, why change it? But Perez fought back and he finished second. That's good for Perez to finish in second. Obviously, he's under so much criticism at the moment. And it was a good comeback drive. But I just sat there asking myself, it's the car. It is the car. They're driving rocket ships and they brought a new one that looks even different again. I mean, what was your take on Perez's drive?
Well, I mean, a little side note first. Apparently, they're bringing a considerable upgrade to, I think it's Imola, which is what, round 6 or 7. So, yay. We have that to look forward to. To be fair to Sergio Perez, he did everything that he needs to this weekend. The expectation is, generally speaking, to qualify 0.3 from Max over one lap. It was 3.5 off, so you know, maybe could have done a little bit more there. But through the race, yeah, works his way through the guys in front of him pretty effortlessly. You know, no thrills, no spills. A very solid performance. Now, I was maybe a little bit harsh on him in my aforementioned 5 things we learned piece, where I said that the winning margin is maybe a cause for concern, because realistically, he maximised what he could. There's no point in overworking the car and trying to track down Max further. He had more than enough pace in hand to manage Sainz, so he just kind of cruised home. So I don't think that's necessarily representative of his pace. But also, on the other hand, if you are going to try and pick holes in it, that was 10 seconds slower than the gap between him and Max in Bahrain last year in a race in which he qualified second, admittedly. So, yeah, I'm meandering because, yeah, it was a good result. It was exactly what he needs to do. If he does that for the rest of the season, he will be just fine, and he may well earn himself an extension.
Mm. But I think to your point, he can't do that every race. He can't qualify in fifth and finish second. You know, there are some tracks where you just can't. And you know, should Perez be closer to Max, Abby?
I think so. With the machinery that he is in, and with how fast and strong we know that car to be, I think he should definitely be closer. There is obviously a difference in levels between Verstappen and Perez as racing drivers, but he qualifying fifth and having that massive gap, like, I agree with what you said, Sam, where he didn't need to push to chase Max and that, but maybe just a little bit closer so there wasn't such a huge gap between them. But I think if he can qualify higher and keep up the race performance that he showed in Bahrain, then he will be in good stead for the rest of the year.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not having a go at Perez here. You know, he finished second. That's exactly what he's there to do. He brought in maximum points for the team. It just feels like, can he continue this? You know, has he got it in him? And it's a good start for him. The other driver I want to talk about, I mean, we'll talk about Ferrari as a whole in a minute, but Carlos Sainz, the man who has lost his drive for next year, if you haven't heard, to Lewis Hamilton. I was looking forward to seeing him this weekend, because if there's anything that's going to make a man go all out, it's knowing that you've lost your seat for next year to a 7-time world champion. So he's obviously on the lookout for a new seat. And I thought Carlos Sainz was absolutely mega throughout this race. Very entertaining. And not going to sit behind Leclerc either and dawdle around, you know. What did you guys think of Sainz and the Ferrari pair?
You know, it wasn't a win. And I said that I would be insufferable if he did win. But I'm going to be partially insufferable because he did, for all intents and purposes, third place behind the two Red Bulls is a win. He looks very good. And he will, you know, if he carries on like that, he may well win the best of the rest, which is, let's face it, as good as the world championship at the moment. He looks very, very good. And there are two main kind of schools of thought to your thinking there, really, in terms of he looked like he had a point to prove. To some, and I think this is a fair point, and he's said himself, he's already proven what he can do in F1. And he is, yeah, we know Carlos Sainz, we know what he's about, and we know how quick he is, and that he often goes unnoticed under the radar, and unfairly so. However, I don't think that that detracts from the point that he is clearly someone with a point to prove. Whether or not he's actually having to audition for a new drive, I think is probably the correct term, for next year, he is not going to necessarily play the team game. He's there for himself, and he's going to do what he has to do to prove what he has to and to get where he has to. You know, and this was a renewed, an almost liberated Carlos Sainz, and he had the bit between his teeth. He is a man on a mission. And yeah, he, regardless of the issues that that Charles Leclerc had, Sainz wasn't going to hang around and wait for team orders. He was like, I'm going to take it. I want that position and I will take it. And I imagine that's how he'll be for the rest of the year.
That's the thing, isn't it? This year is like an audition year for him. He has nothing to lose. He doesn't have a seat for 2025. So this is the year for him to showcase and prove to people, like, you should sign me as your driver. And I've often felt that he's like not been recognised as the driver that he should be. And like everyone says, Ferrari is Leclerc's team. And Leclerc's the future world champion.
Not next year.
No.
We'll see.
But Sainz is an amazing driver. And I feel like Singapore last year kind of really cemented that in people's minds. And now he's come, he's got a podium. He was not waiting for Leclerc or for Ferrari, like you said, Sam. He knew he was faster. He went for it. He went on the attack, got P3. And I'm really excited to see what else he can do this season, because I really like him. And he has that fire in him, I think, this season to be like, look, I deserve a seat. I'm going to show you why you should sign me.
Yeah, and realistically, we know there's a seat at Mercedes. There's instability at Red Bull. Yes, he's been linked to the Audi project, which is, at the moment, going to take him down to Sauber. That's the team that neither driver got out of Q1. He's probably setting his sights higher than that, at least in the short term. Because, yeah, Audi may, well, they're coming to support in 2026, but it may take them some time to actually be competitive and potentially worthy of a driver of Carlos Sainz's caliber. So, yeah, there's plenty that's going to develop there on the driver market. Charles Leclerc, I actually think he did pretty well, all things considered. That car looked like an absolute monster to try and handle with those brake issues. So, apparently he was losing 6 tenths a lap because of that. So to bring home P4, for all, you know, by all accounts from the team, was a good result, and he maximised on the day. So yeah, it's going to be ultimately disappointing for him. He would have wanted a podium. He probably could have, you know, would have wanted to at least finish second. But you know, I think he's got to look at the positives there. The Ferrari's looking like it's the racier of the trailing pack.
Mm. Now, George Russell got into P2 at the start of the race, but it slipped away from him. And it doesn't look like Mercedes have that race pace they thought they had. Hamilton was struggling. Seemed like they were managing a few issues as well. A bit of a slow start again for Mercedes this season. I'm sure it's just cemented in Hamilton's mind why he's moving away next year, especially with the progression of Ferrari. I thought we saw a really good performance from George Russell again, against some of the issues that there were. Do you think Mercedes can come back and improve, or do you think this is just going to be another similar season that we've seen for the past 2 years, where they just promise and don't deliver?
It may well look that way when all is said and done. When they, you know, if they finish second, you know, some way adrift from Red Bull. But this weekend did still feel different. It felt like, you know what, the car's not dreadful. It just, we are just not having a particularly strong weekend. We are on the right path now, at least. That's how it felt, more so than why have we done this? Why does our car look like this? It's, you know, awful. You know, it's very difficult to drive. It doesn't feel like a Formula One car. All that stuff, all this, everything that's been said. It's, yeah, there is you need to make a distinction between those two situations. So yeah, I think there's more to come from Mercedes. I just think it was not a particularly polished weekend from them, which, you know, happens.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to find talking points from this race, and I'm struggling a bit. But one thing we can talk about is Tsunoda and Ricciardo having a little bit of a fallout towards the end of the race, battling for P12. Very exciting stuff. Abby, what did you make of these two scrapping and having a bit of a rant over the radio? Do you think there's unhappiness there, or it's just Tsunoda being hot-headed as usual?
I think we all know that Tsunoda can be quite expressive and emotional and fiery in the cockpit of the car, and like rightly so, because it's a high adrenaline sport. You do have all the emotions flowing through you at the time. I think he said that he was unsure why RB ordered them to swap positions at that time, because he was, I believe, within DRS of Magnussen and was trying to chase Magnussen. But they both, at the end of the day, Ricciardo and Tsunoda both said that they need to go back to the team, have a full debrief. And I think you're always going to get animosity between teammates. It's very rarely that people in Formula One are friends, albeit Lando, Alex and George, who we saw karting over the weekend. But yeah, I think it could just be down to Tsunoda. Ricciardo kind of, he showed his anger, but then he did rein it back in slightly as well.
Yeah, he was much more measured in the media scrum afterwards than he was on radio. And also, I'm not sure how much the likes of Albon, Russell or Norris would be friends necessarily if they're in the same team. We've seen before what being teammates can do to friends. They are ultimately the first person that you need to beat. So yeah, there's always going to be a level of animosity if you're fighting for your career with RB, or even fighting for potentially a seat with Red Bull. So I think the reason why Daniel Ricciardo was miffed is he came out and said that we'd always spoken about this, about this specific team order, because we knew that I was going to run the soft most likely at the end of the race. So I think he felt a bit taken aback by Tsunoda's reaction, because he was like, we spoke about this. I don't think anyone's right or wrong necessarily. I don't think the way it went down was particularly good. But I think we'll be fine by the time we get to Saudi Arabia. I don't think it's going to develop into anything more than that, even if there will be plenty of questions about it on Wednesday this week.
So one driver that did make a good recovery, we've already spoke about him in qualifying, Lance Stroll. Sam, what did you think of Lance Stroll throughout this race? Why was he fighting to get back? He should have been there already, but he did an all right job.
Well, he got tagged, didn't he? First corner. It wasn't a great Friday for him, but it was a much stronger Saturday. God, that's going to throw us this week and next. He got tagged by Nico Hülkenberg into the first corner, which not only ruined Stroll's race partially, it ruined Hülkenberg's race as well, which is, you know, annoying. And the reason why we're just getting to this specific point now is because it was a race so devoid of incidents and, you know, talking points that, you know, you cover it more generally, right? Lance went straight to the back and then had to work his way through. Finished P10, got a point. So, you know, the top five teams took all the points, which is a fear of ours throughout the season. It's going to be the case. But what's promising for Stroll is that, yeah, he finished 20 seconds down on his teammate, but he only finished one position down on Fernando Alonso. And bearing in mind that Alonso qualified sixth, and Stroll had to work his way from the back, I think that's a pretty strong performance. So yeah, if he, and again, like Perez, if he can perform like that throughout the season, he'll be just fine.
Okay, so as we've mentioned, it was Max Verstappen who won the race, his 55th career win. Sergio Perez finished second, followed by Carlos Sainz, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Lando Norris, Lewis Hamilton, Oscar Piastri, Alonso and Stroll rounding out the top 10. We're going to do our drivers of the day. So I will start with Abby. Who was your driver of the day, and was it the same as the fan vote?
Yes, I did think Science was driver of the day, but for the purposes of the podcast, steering away from the fan vote, I am going to go with Lance Stroll. We just talked about it. His qualifying wasn't great, but his race recovery was very impressive, considering all the speculation about him potentially leaving and not being good enough to be in his seat. I thought it was quite an impressive drive from him.
Okay, and Sam, who are you going to give it to?
Oh, I can't believe Abby didn't go for George Russell. I was going to go for Lance Stroll, but I'm going to keep it relatively simple and say, no, I'm not. I'm not going to keep it relatively simple. Ollie, you can if you want to. Sergio Perez, I think, is my driver of the day. He did everything he needed to do. Yeah. Basically that. I don't know what else to say. Well done, Sergio Perez. You did everything you needed to do.
Well, I had two ready because I knew. I sort of saw those ones coming. Verstappen was my backup, so I'm going to go for Carlos Sainz. I agree with the fans. I think he was the most entertaining driver on the day. He was my driver of the day. So we're going to be back next week with our review of the Saudi Arabian Grand Prix. And I hope for everyone's sake that we have a much more exciting race to talk about. Jeddah is quite a notorious track. We have had lots of dramas, big crashes, even political events. And we've also got lots and lots of rumours building up into this weekend, everything going on at Red Bull. Are you guys excited for this race weekend? It's got to be better than the one we've just had. Surely it does. Sam, what's your thoughts on the upcoming Saudi Arabian Grand Prix at Jeddah?
Well, what concerns me the most is that given that I gave it a 5 out of 10 in Bahrain, it could go 5 points up, but it could also go 5 points down. So it might not necessarily get better. That's the scary point. Mm. Now, truth be told, I think it will be hopefully a better weekend. I don't know if it will be up top, but Saudi Arabia has a way of throwing up some surprises given the pace of the circuit. It's very quick for a street circuit. So there'll surely be some things to talk about from that. Also, F2's back again. And F1 Academy has got its opening round of the season, as I mentioned earlier. So that will be very interesting to see how that does with its first year of full broadcasting as part of the support package. So yeah, there will be plenty to get our teeth into.
Yes, very much the same. I think I quite like Jeddah as a circuit in some respects, but I think I'm most excited for F1 Academy, seeing the F1 liveries, but also the official partners like Puma, Tommy Hilfiger, Charlotte Tilbury having their liveries as well. Sam has got a Tommy Hilfiger pillow.
I do, yes. Because before I was poor, I used to have a fair amount of Tommy Hilfiger clothing. Yes, so I like Tommy Hilfiger, and so my sister, to take the piss out of me, bought me a Tommy Hilfiger cushion, and yeah, now there's a Tommy Hilfiger racing car, so.
There is.
Wow, you can tell content's dry.
Hey, we're keeping it organic, we're keeping it fresh.
Good. All right. Well, we will be back to discuss that. And until then, thank you very much for listening. Abby, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And Sam, thank you very much.
That's all right.
Okay. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
You're listening to the Cut to the Race podcast. It's lights out and away we go.
Sports Social Podcast Network.